I'm podcasting in pain today. I
Oh
badly burnt the roof of my mouth on
boy.
the first bite of my dinner last night, and it's like really
What was the dinner?
it was I made a frozen pizza using air quotes here. It was a dairy-free fake pepperoni. Gluten-free. I don't even have a gluten issue, but that's just what I bought. Gluten-free, dairy-free pizza made with oat cream-based cheese. And the first bite, I needed to wait about 5 more minutes for it to cool off, apparently, because the first bite, it just like all this dairy-free, gluten-free oat cheese burnt the crap out of the top of my mouth.
Let me speak for everybody when I say it serves you fucking right.
I had a feel like you might feel that way.
That
Yeah, no animals of any kind were harmed in the making of the product, but
except you.
this animal was harmed in the eating of the product. Welcome to another episode of Low Rollers, the weekly gambling industry podcast presented by Casino Reports. I am Eric Raskin. I am joined by my co-host Jeff Edelstein. And let's get right into some news at the top of the show. This is the final episode on which I will begin the podcast by introducing Jeff as my co-host. And no, the White House and the FCC have nothing to do with this. There's some podcasting musical chairs going on at Third Planet Media. Jeff is taking over hosting duties for another podcast. We can't go into detail just yet. That official announcement is coming in the next day or so. Plus, he also has been hosting Props.com's Friday Primetime Prop Show. And so the decision was made to change up the Low Rollers format. Starting next week, I will be the solo host, and Low Rollers will lean more into the interview segment with a little less emphasis on the news of the week. If listeners have enjoyed the chemistry and banter between me and Jeff, don't despair too much. I'm sure Jeff will return to this pod fairly regularly as my interview guest. But this is the last episode on which we will be co-hosting together. End of an era. I'll have more to say at the end of the pod, but for now, Jeff, anything you'd like to add?
Wait a second, what's going
Don't play dumb. You knew this was happening.
Yeah, so it's been a pleasure annoying you once a week, Eric. I'll have to find another way to
You
do
annoy
it.
me far more than once a week, Jeff.
I love annoying you. It is actually one of my more favorite things to do is to gently prod you into annoyance. One of my favorite things to do, listeners, is on Slack, if you're familiar with the Slack messaging app there. I'll like be telling Eric something or asking Eric a question or blah blah blahing something, and instead of putting it all in one giant message, I will hit return after each sentence, so his phone pings every time. And the only I do this A because that's how I normally do it, but B ever since he told me that it annoys the shit out of him, I do it on purpose now all the time. So that's fun. I'll still continue doing that. You don't need to
Okay,
worry.
great.
Yeah, I'd be happy to be a guest because I have a large ego and being a guest would suit me well. But in the meantime, we have a show to do today.
Yes.
And that show will be featuring an interview with our colleague, Chris Altruda, who is going to talk about all about the casino drama in New York and where those downstate casino licenses are going. He's got a hot take. I'm sure we'll get to that. But before we do, the news, as always, plenty to discuss.
Yeah, and it's been a very big news week for the DFS Plus operator Prize Picks, which was at the center of the biggest news story of the day on Monday morning, and then again at the center of the biggest news story of the day on Tuesday morning. First, one of the worst kept secrets in the industry became official on Monday when the Czech Republic-based lottery company Allwyn announced it had bought a majority stake in Prize Picks for $1.6 billion, valuing Prize Picks at $2.5 billion, and making this the largest acquisition in U.S. fantasy sports history. The management team at Prize Picks will stay in place; no changes there. The very next day, news that is maybe directly related, maybe not. Prize Picks was given approval Tuesday to offer prediction markets, either on its own or in collaboration with an existing prediction market operator. So Prize Picks, which broke into the U.S. market by offering a form of sports betting without obtaining state-by-state sports betting licenses, is about to offer a different form of sports betting without state regulation. Quite the week for Prize Picks. Jeff, what do you want to comment on first? The acquisition, the prediction market thing, jumble it all together?
I bet you I know who went to sleep with a big smile on their face Monday night. Jeremy Levine of Underdog, because if Prize Picks is worth 2.5 billion, what is Underdog worth? My God. Listen, hats off to the Prize Picks team. I mean, wow,
Yeah.
that's crazy, man. That's a big that's a shockingly big number. But it goes to show you, I guess that we still don't know anything about the gambling industry is what it goes to show me, honestly. Because like it, while Prize Picks runs a great operation, I have to imagine that if Allwyn wants to get into this, like they could have done it cheaper, than buying a company. I mean, I don't know. The barrier to entry to this stuff is not a lot of money. It's a hosting company and a website and some KYC or whatever. But hey, listen, it is what it is. Prize Picks got their bag, as the kids are saying today.
Yes.
I speak as an unk. That's lingo for an old person who doesn't know what they're talking about. And yeah, the prediction market thing is interesting, right? As always, it's interesting. But the prediction markets, it's just getting more and more saturated with companies like getting into it. And it does remind me of, I guess, like when PASPA broke. Nobody thought FanDuel and DraftKings were going to be the
Right.
leaders down the road. So, like, I think thinking that Kalshi and Polymarket are going to be the leaders down the road in 5 years might be fool's gold, might not be, who knows? But yeah, once again, more news in the prediction market space. Not shocked. And yeah, good. Again, but the just the money involved, like, wow, is just all I can say.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was you who said this on a recent episode or maybe one of our guests that Prize Picks and Underdog may ultimately be to prediction markets what FanDuel and DraftKings became to sports betting. If that was you, looking like a good call. If that was someone else, also looking like a good call. I can't quite recall, but that topic did come up recently. To echo another thing you said about nobody saw this coming. Nobody knows anything. Prize Picks founder Adam Wexler was one of the earliest Gamble On guests. I guess this was when John was the co-host still, and I remember him telling us all about Prize Picks, and I'm kind of like, okay, this is very transparently sports betting. Let's see how long this is allowed. Let's see if it catches on. I was very skeptical, and now he's a rather wealthy man, and I'm not.
Yeah, and we're a bunch of schmucks. Yeah, I mean, I the money is it's I'm surprised. I mean, there's just no other way to put it. Like, I feel like that's a lot more than I would have thought it was worth. But I don't
Right.
know anything,
Right.
I have no insight,
Once
but I
these numbers get into a certain point, it's almost, I don't know, how much difference is being valued at 2.5 billion versus 1.5 billion versus 3.5. It's all once you're past a couple hundred million, it's all pretty crazy to me.
Yeah,
But
I mean, it takes me like 2.5 years to make that kind of money at this
yeah,
job.
at
So,
least, yeah.
and my math, I gotta look at my math on that. But yeah, no, I mean, good for everybody. I mean, it's here we go, right? Just.
I wonder how much of the appeal of Prize Picks to Allwyn was in the prediction market entry, and just the timing of the two pieces of news. Were they waiting for
Well, it has to
word
be, right?
that they right that a day ahead of it becoming official that they knew Prize Picks was going to be approved for prediction markets, and that's how they closed the deal. I assume that helped with the valuation, all that. Yeah, it seems like these two things are related. And then the one other thing I want to comment is just, Allwyn's a lottery company. I find the intersection of lottery and DFS Plus very interesting because I wrote a story just last week about Lottery Now, a small lottery courier company that runs the Mito lottery app, adding a Mito fantasy game, a peer-to-peer, basically DFS Plus. But they designed it with sort of an idea to appeal to lottery players. So Allwyn must see some of that same crossover. This idea that player prop parlays, which is what DFS Plus is, that sort of game correlates with lottery, that they can be somewhat complementary. It's a enough here. Two instances now, I think qualifies as a trend to watch, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's also possible that there's like some dead Dutchman with some, still holding onto their tulip shares that kind of like whispers in my ear. The prediction more,
That whole
the
thing
point,
went way over my head. Go ahead, explain your point. Yeah.
we may be bubbling up here in prediction markets. Right? Like we may be entering a bubble where like prediction mark, it
Right.
doesn't necessarily not remind me of what were we all saying a year ago?
Sweepstakes.
Sweepstakes,
Right,
sweepstakes,
right,
sweepstakes. Would you like
right.
to be holding a sweepstakes company right now? I wouldn't.
Not especially, right.
So, all right.
Yeah. All right. Well, yes. Conclusion, as usual,
Nobody knows what's
we
happening.
didn't see any of this coming, and we don't know where it's going from here.
Yeah, all right.
So glad you're listening to us for our expertise. All right, well, speaking of nobody knows shit, we
Yeah.
have one other news item to discuss, and it's a sad one. This really sucks. Dave Sharapan, aka the sportsbook consigliere, aka the consig, died over the weekend at age 55, a couple of months after surgery to remove cancer that they were optimistic he'd bounce right back from, but it unfortunately did not go that way. Just awful. Dave leaves behind a wife and three daughters, and the outpouring on social media and through the sports betting community, proof of how universally well-liked he was. He was a guest once on Low Rollers, a guest a couple of times on Gamble On, just one of our favorite people. This one really hurts. Jeff, what do you have to say about the consig?
Yeah, he was one of those people that it felt like when you were talking to him that the sun shined a little bit brighter on you, right? He
Yeah.
just had that about him. And it shows based on like the outpouring that was on social media and on TV, ESPN and Pat McAfee, everybody. Yeah, I mean, I never shook his hand. I only knew him over the phone and through video. And I only talked to him a handful of times, but like I felt like he was a friend. Like it's
Right.
weird. Like and that's the effect that he had on apparently every single person that crossed his path. An asshole like me, who nobody will say this stuff about when I die, like I feel like I have no right to even discuss it. But it's true. It's such a cliche, and it's fucking so stupid to say, but Dave Sharapin, the world was a better place with him in it. And
Yeah.
I don't think there's a person alive that would dispute that. So yeah, it just sucks. It
Yeah.
just sucks.
I mentioned this in my article Monday that I did get to shake his hand in person a couple of times. I met him twice in person, and I'm glad that neither of those was in a stale conference setting or as part of a big group or anything like that. I first met him when his daughter's softball tournament was like 15 minutes from my house. So I drove out to meet him and sat in the bleachers and watched some softball with him. And then the second time I met him, I was covering a fight in Vegas. Actually, I'd been out there to cover a fight a few months earlier, and Dave saw that I'd been there and did the faux offended thing that I didn't tell him I was coming. So the next time I was there for a fight, I told him I was coming. We met up at the Park MGM just to grab lunch and a beer. We're looking for where to eat. He said, "Let's go to the sports book. They have good food." So we go to the sports book, and of course, everybody who worked there knew Dave, greeted him with hugs and smiles. Yeah, he was just one of those magnetic sorts of people, and he loved sports and sports betting, and I'm generally opposed to flat brim hats, especially if you're over the age of 25, but Dave
It
even made
worked.
that work. He pulled it
Yeah,
off.
he
So.
sure did. Yeah, it's there. There's words don't do any of this justice. And it's again, it just it's it the sun shined brighter on you when you were talking to him, when you were near him, when you thought about him. And so it's obviously very, very, very sad that he's gone.
All right. Well, RIP Consig, we're going to miss him. Are we ready to bring on our interview guest?
Yes.
Thank goodness for the ridiculously drawn-out downstate New York casino bidding process, because without it, Casino Reports never would have published this sentence. There were raw emotions, frayed nerves, flaring tempers, F-bombs dropped repeatedly, a delay due to a fist fight, and accusations of paid astroturfing supporters all squeezed into 4+ hours of what felt like nonstop drama at the Coney Island YMCA on 29th Street. We now welcome to the podcast the man who wrote that sentence, the man who has been covering every twist and turn in the New York casino saga for us, the man Steve Ruddick has hailed as the Steve Pornacki of the gambling world, our colleague Chris Altruda. Chris, thanks for joining us on Low Rollers.
Thanks for having me, fellas.
So let's start with your projection based on where things stand right now as we record this interview Wednesday afternoon about where this is headed. It's down to the two racinos, Steve Cohen's Metropolitan Park bid and the Bally's bid in the Bronx. And as Jeff and I discussed last week, the seas seem to be parting for Steve Cohen. But if I want to go full conspiracy theorist, I'd say watch out for the Bally's bid that could further enrich the Trump family. Chris, what do you say? Is the third license going to Metropolitan Park?
I really don't know. I mean, it's one of those things that when Mayor Adams vetoed Mama Rodo's downvote of the Parkland alienation, it was essentially a favor to have the process play itself out. I don't think it was a quid pro quo for his allegations being dropped from at that federal level. I think this was one of those things where he was generally interested in seeing the process play out for the Bronx. And the hearings kind of also played that out. The two state assembly members who spoke in favor of the project at the second hearing, one noted how infrastructure projects are passing the Bronx by. So there is a legit need for at least to have this process work its way through. That said, the other standing project left is Metropolitan Park. And Metropolitan Park's problem is 9 miles to the north in the form of Resorts World, which is going to make Shangri-La Aqueduct. And I don't see, even with all of Hard Rock's business acumen, all of Steve Cohen's business acumen, and how you can have this synergistic pull together of a ballpark, a casino, and whatever else you want to put with it, and the infrastructure and all this, how are you going to beat Resorts World when it is 9 miles away? If it's 90 miles away, oh yeah, that's easy. That's no problem. But it's 9 miles away. That's the number I keep coming back to. Just like when Kevin Jones made his pitch the second hearing, $1.7 million a day in revenue. That's what Resorts World is doing now. So when you put in the fact that they would be up and running within 6 months of getting that full license, that number will obviously go up. Now you're chasing a number that maybe it's $2 million a day, maybe it's $2.5 million a day based on the increased number of gaming positions. How are you going to compete with this? And I don't see Hard Rock being able to do that against this, regardless of what amenities you throw on top of this right now. To me, it's very possible that the New York State Gaming Commission could look at any one of these four that gets sent forward and say, you know what? We're good with the two. And it wouldn't be terribly surprising based on what has happened with these community advisory committees.
Wow. So, all right. So let's set some odds. Are the so the two racinos, they're -10,000 at this point? Is there any way either of them doesn't get a license?
Resorts World is off the board. I mean,
Okay.
Resorts World is like Nick Saban Alabama at its peak right now. There is nothing that can stop that bid from one moving forward to the facility board, and then two being licensed. MGM Empire City is still on the board, but it's a heavy favorite. You know, it's playing the non-conference bye games at this point. It's I mean the What I found interesting about the MGM one is that there are still local concerns about traffic. And that's been a universal throughout this process. There are traffic complaints, there are congestion complaints, there are crime complaints. This one to me, that to me, the MGM one seems to me to be an easier fix. And some of it was addressed in their presentations about what they're doing to mitigate and alleviate. But it doesn't seem like they've done a good job selling that, which is also kind of surprising because they've been there for X amount of years. And MGM, it's not like MGM is like some sort of monolith that doesn't respond to people. I mean, this is a group that's also trying to put a casino in China, and that's no small task. So there's a little bit of a surprise that there's pushback, but at the same time, that license is theirs to lose. And I don't think they're going to lose it because, and also, you know, Mike Spano, you know, said, well, you know, if they don't get this license, we'll have to shut it down. And, you know, you're not going to shut a casino down that's already making bank for you already. So I think those two are definitely going to, you know, get the route, get the green light. I don't like is too harsh a term, but to me, the Bally's proposal in a vacuum by itself would have been okay. Put it in context with the issues they're having trying to put together a casino in Chicago that is worth half the total cost is somewhere around $2 billion, or probably go up to 2.2 when you factor in all the labor and everything else. There are so many issues building it. Then you look at the issues of the temporary casino that is only barely make 50% revenue projections of the city tax, because they pencil $35 million a year for it. Right now it's on pace for like 16. And that's a red flag. That to me is a huge red flag, because, you know, they're not, I mean, granted, Chicago's a metropolis, but at the same time, the Bronx is not some sparsely populated suburban village. The Bronx is fairly densely populated as well. And if you're not doing well in a metropolis like this, what makes you think you're going to do well in the Bronx just because you have the Throgs Neck and people coming off that? That's the part I don't see. It feels like they're trying to walk and chew gum at the same time, and they haven't been able to prove they can do either on its own. So that's where I almost see the gaming commission going, yeah, okay, we did this and we didn't like anything.
I was covering this before you joined us here, and we got the band back together. So I haven't been paying as close attention as I was, you know, a year ago. But I am and remain like pretty well gobsmacked that these little 6-person community boards can be like, no, 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 no. And, you know, God, you know, all the money spent and time spent, and it's all just, you know, flushed down the toilet. Are you surprised that all of the Manhattan bids, to me, especially the Caesars bid, just got like wiped away?
This I always thought the Caesars Palace one was the worst of the three Manhattan ones, for the sole reason is that you can't be an existential threat to another industry. And that was what you were going up against in Broadway. You were directly threatening an industry that's been around for a century plus. And it's established industry. It's a multi-billion dollar a year industry. It's very hard to go. And to Caesar's credit, they tried to craft it the right way. They want to be an additive. They only put 4 restaurants in the hotel. They only put X amount of hotel rooms. But at the end of the day, you know, and this economy is also flagging to an extent, the casino doesn't become an additive. It becomes a competitor. And you're not going to, and when disposable income becomes a zero sum game, everyone gets threatened. Right. And Broadway, you know, is the 800 pound gorilla in that area. I mean, when you look at it, if you go to a Broadway play now, you're factoring dinner, you're factoring parking, minimum $500 spent.
Right.
You're going to tell me that if you go to a casino and you spend $500, there's no guarantee you're walking out with any money after you spend that gamble that $500, that show you may go to, maybe you're not going now.
Yeah, well, that's a good point.
So that's one of the things. I mean, the other thing is that I knew there's always a degree of NIMBY that comes with this as well. And the Caesars Palace one came in the form of Broadway. The residential blocks of opposition were a little more surprising to me. I was not ready for the boomer crew from Manhattan Plaza and all 2,600 of its residents to come out in force for both proposals for the Avenir. I really did not know too much of the geography on the east side when it came to Freedom Plaza, and watching people from Murray Hill and Tudor City come out in droves. And I also think one of the things that backfired against these two proposals specifically was this forced charm offensive by the gaming operators. I think that engendered a lot of ill will from the residents, because they're the ones, in theory, with this, the way the CAC was designed to operate, is that the CAC was supposed to hear about the community. And you can say that Mohegan, you know, is a good operator in the community. You can say Rush Street is a good operator in the community where they exist. But no one wants to hear that on the west side of Manhattan at this moment. No one wants to hear that on the east side of Manhattan at this moment. It's, what are you going to do for me to make my life slightly less inconvenient if you put this in my backyard? And I thought the Avenir probably did that a little better. But the other problem with the Avenir was that you were going to have concurrent construction of a gaming venue and the Port Authority for at least 5 years. And we're all close enough to the west side of Manhattan to know, you know, what a, you know, what an absolute bomb area that would be with both constructions going on. So that was a problem. The Soliev group, it kept coming back, and the question kept coming up again and again and again, and it was a valid question. Why do you need a casino? Why do you need to build a casino to have residential housing? And it's a very legitimate question based on the profile of the Soliev group. You know, you can make an argument that you could put a shopping plaza there as an engine. Now you might not be able to put two residential towers with 1,000 units of affordable housing, but you can arguably put one in of maybe 400. And that would be probably more well received than a casino. So I'm not terribly surprised that all three got shut out. I always thought Caesar's Palace was the worst one of the three, just based on what you were trying to do and what it was competing against.
I was wish casting that one, I guess. I mean, I wanted to be able to hug Elmo, see a show, play a little blackjack, you know, maybe run into Jay-Z.
And go skate and skate a lap around the tree. Yeah,
that's it.
now you can hug Elmo, you can see a show, you can maybe bump into Jay-Z, right, and then you go back home to New Jersey and play your online casino.
That's, well, I never touched the online casino. I don't know who you think you're talking to.
Right. Sorry, my bad. So when this is all over, Chris, when this licensing is done, and whether it ends up being two, as you're kind of predicting, or there is a third, what do you think are the chances for the online casino part that Joe Addabbo, he's been pushing it, but we've kind of known all along that it's nothing's going to happen till this gets sorted out. Once this gets sorted out, you see movement next year?
I think he will be more concerted in his effort, and I think he will be able to focus it a lot harder on the Assembly and Senate. I mean, you're looking at the fact that right now sports betting with that 51% rate is bringing in billions per year. And a 30% tax rate on online casino, while high, will come across as reasonable to the operators.
Yeah.
And also, bigger picture, as much as we, you know, don't want to admit it out loud, there is life beyond Manhattan. You know, there is life beyond the five boroughs. And you would get that population into it more. So I think, and especially if they don't issue a third license, he's going to go absolutely, you know, all in aggressive and say, look, you know, we went through this process. We determined the Gaming Commission determined it was not suitable. This is my alternative. This is where we get tax revenue. And this is how it's going to get done. And I think he would find a very receptive audience. Now, are you going to see the operators negotiate like there's no tomorrow to try and come off that 30% rate? Absolutely. But I also think he has a far more receptive audience if the third license doesn't get issued. But even in the interim, right, you're also talking now, both proposals that would be the third licensee are 5 years away from the first bet.
Right.
What are you going to do in the 5 years? You know, also, you know, the sports betting matrix can change. You know, technically there is still one license now available because Resorts World is out, and whether or not they sell, it's up to them. But if you add more operators, the tax matrix goes down. So now, if you say maybe in 2028 or something like that, you have 12 operators and a 35% sports betting tax rate, all of a sudden now there's an urgency to have that online casino tax revenue. So I think he goes all in next year. And in some respects, he should. I mean, he's the architect of gaming in the state in some respects. And you know, he does, you know, to his credit, he does not half-ass these things. He might be loud about it, but he doesn't half-ass it. So I think you see it regardless, but I think if there's no third licensee, he is absolutely going in from day one on it.
That's really interesting. Hadn't thought about that, but that, yeah, proponents of online casino should maybe be rooting for only two licenses to go out, just to give them that much more of a push and a reason to say, let's legalize online casino.
Right.
So I ask a lot of people this question. I don't think I know your answer. What's your game of choice in the casino? Where am I most likely to find Chris Altruda if he's sneaking in a little gambling at the end of the night?
If he is not at the sports book, he is at the blackjack table. It is until I want to say 5 years ago, and only because my friend dragged me to the craps table, blackjack was the only game I had the patience for because I can control it to a degree because I would make it a point to sit on third base.
Okay.
We grew up in New Jersey. You go down to Atlantic City. The first thing you realize is that you play for the table or someone puts a cigarette in your eye. And that's kind of, that's kind of how I learned. And up until recently, when, because Milwaukee has Potawatomi next to, like, you can fall off the Marquette campus and Potawatomi Bingo is right there. One day we played craps. He gave me a tutorial and I wound up throwing for 20 minutes one time. I'm like, okay, this is fun. I can do this. But it's really blackjack and craps, and that's about it for me.
Well, and one more argument in favor of online casino, then nobody will ever try to put a cigarette out in your eye while you're playing online casino. If you ever try it, Jeff, you'll find that to be the case.
No, that would make it. I think that would be a good like AI feature. Like, you hit on a 15 to a dealer six, and like somebody like comes up to you and says, "What the hell's wrong with you?" The cigarette comes floating across the
Right.
screen.
It's like ne next level RG warning pop-up is
Right.
the cigarette in the eye virtually.
Get the really meme.
Right. Yes.
The full screen pop-up. Really?
All right. Great stuff, Chris. Always good talking to you. Really interesting insights. And everyone heard it here first. If indeed there are only two licenses, Chris Altruda called it. So thanks. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks, fellas. Appreciate being on.
Our thanks again to Chris. Interesting takes there from a guy who's been following this real closely. Jeff, for your final episode as co-host, I am leaving you with an uplifting gambling tale. We're going
Oh,
out on a high
good.
note.
Nice.
You will recall that a couple of months ago, in discussing my light addiction to hoof and even more poof, I lamented that I'd gotten to the upgraded bonus wheel several times and could never land on the really lucrative game, the Super Mansion feature. You can probably already guess where this is going, but a quick preamble about where I got the money I was playing with in FanDuel's daily reward thing. You get the three free spins every day. We've talked about how much we hate landing on the purple tickets because they never amount to anything. Last week, I won $2 from those purple tickets. So on Sunday night, I have $2 in casino bonus in my account. So that equates to 5 40-cent spins on Hoof and Even More Poof. And so with their money, won in the daily rewards drawing, I finally landed on the Super Mansion feature. The good news, 26 of the 30 squares on the screen ended up filled with those brick houses.
Lovely.
I also hit about $30 on standard line pays by the end of my spins. The frustrating news, those 26 mansions added up to like $99 because way too many of them were the minimum 5x, which in this case is $2. None of them were massive jackpots or anything. So I got to the Super Mansion game finally, but once there, I probably had like a bottom 10% run out. In the end, though, 40 cents of their money turned into $129. It was like a 320x return. Very exciting for a true low roller like me. So
That is.
I thought you'd enjoy that, Jeff. Good story to go out on.
I'm not gonna lie, there I have a tear in my eye of joy.
Yes. Well, before you wrap up and sign off and then say the catchphrase and all that, I just want to say, had a blast co-hosting with you. It's been a great run. And this isn't goodbye because we're still working together closely and you'll
Yep.
still annoy me on Slack and you will be
Absolutely.
back on the pod as a guest and all that. But a tip of the cap to you, Jeff. 37 episodes of Low Roller together, maybe 75 or so episodes of Gamble On together.
Yeah.
You are in the all-time top two gambling podcast co-hosts I've ever had.
Wow, that's it's high praise. And by the way, I'll be happy to be a guest on Low Rollers, but just I don't know if you know this. My appearance fee for these things are $2,000. I'll talk to my agent. We're pals, maybe we could shave 10% of that. We'll see. But yeah, I'm gone from here from Low Rollers, but I won't be gone from your podcast feeds. And honestly, if you listen to this podcast, I'm 99% sure you're already following the other podcast that I'm going to be taking over. That shall be revealed Friday. In the meantime, Eric, I'm going to miss kibitzing with you before we record each week. I'm going to miss introducing our guests and talking to all these people with you. But most of all, I'm going to miss saying, and I'll be saying it now for the last time, we're low rollers, small stakes, and hot takes.